Ing?
I try to keep a straight face and she does too, but soon we're cracking up. God, it feels good to be normal Star and Haley. Has me wondering if I imagined a change. We part at the halfway point to Haley's car and Seven's.
The ass-kicking offer is still on the table, she calls to me.
Bye, Haley. I walk off, rubbing my arms. Spring has decided to go through an identity crisis and get chilly on me. A few feet away, Seven keeps a hand on his car as he talks to his girlfriend, Layla. Him and that damn Mustang. He touches it more than he touches Layla. She obviously doesn't care. She plays with the dreadlock near his face that isn't pulled into his ponytail. Eye roll worthy. Some girls do too much. Can't she play with all them curls on her own head? Honestly, though, I don't have a problem with Layla. She's a geek like Seven, smart enough for Harvard, but Howard bound, and real sweet. She's one of the four black girls in the senior class, and if Seven just wants to date black girls, he picked a great one. I walk up to them and go, "Hem, hem." Seven keeps his eyes on Layla. Go sign Sakani out. Can't, I lie. Mama didn't put me on the list.
Yes, she did. Go.
I fold my arms. I am not walking halfway across campus to get him and halfway back. We can get him when we're leaving. He side-eyes me. But I'm too tired for all that, and it's cold. Seven kisses Layla and goes around to the driver's side.
Acting like that's a long walk, he mumbles.
Acting like we can't get him when we're leaving, I say, and hop in. He starts the car, this nice mix Chris made of Kanye and my other future husband, J. Cole, plays from Seven's iPod dock. He maneuvers through the parking lot traffic to Sakani's school. Seven signs him out of his after-school program, and we leave. I'm hungry, Sakani whines, not even 5 minutes out the parking lot.
Didn't they give you a snack in after school?
Seven asks. So? I'm still hungry.
Greedy butt,
Seven says, and Sakani kicks the back of his seat. Seven laughs.
Okay. Maya asked me to bring some food to the clinic anyway. I'll get you something too.
He looks at Sakani in the rearview mirror.
Is that cool?
Seven freezes. He turns Chris's mix off and slows down.
What you turn the music off for? Sakani asks.
Shut up.
Seven hisses. We stop at a red light. A Riverton Hills patrol car pulls up beside us. Seven straightens up and stares ahead, barely blinking and gripping the steering wheel. His eyes move a little like he wants to look at the cop car. He swallows hard.
Come on, light, he prays. Come on.
I stare ahead and pray for the light to change too. It finally turns green, and Seven lets the patrol car go first. His shoulders don't relax until we get on the freeway. Mine neither. We stop at this Chinese restaurant Mama loves and get food for all of us. She wants me to eat before I talk to the detectives. In Garden Heights, kids play in the streets. Sakani presses his face against my window and watches them. He won't play with them, though. Last time he played with some neighborhood kids, they called him White Boy, because he goes to Williamson. Black Jesus greets us from a mural on the side of the clinic. He has locks, like Seven. His arms stretch the width of the wall, and there are puffy white clouds behind him. Big letters above him remind us that Jesus loves you. Seven passes Black Jesus and goes into the parking lot behind the clinic. He punches in a code to open the gate and parks next to Mama's Camry. I get the tray of sodas, Seven gets the food, and Sakani doesn't take anything because he never takes anything. I hit the buzzer for the back door and wave up at the camera. The door opens into a sterile-smelling hall with bright white walls and white tile floors that reflect us. The hall takes us to the waiting room. A handful of people watch the news on the old box TV in the ceiling or read magazines that have been there since I was little. When this shaggy-haired man sees that we have food, he straightens up and sniffs hard, as if it's for him.
"What y'all bringing up in here?"
Miss Felicia asks at the front desk, stretching her neck to see. Mama comes from the other hallway in her plain yellow scrubs, following a teary-eyed boy and his mom. The boy sucks on a lollipop, a reward for surviving a shot.
"There go my babies," Mama says when she sees us. "And they got my food, too. Come on, let's go in the back." "Save me some,"
Miss Felicia calls after us. Mama tells her to hush. We set the food out on the break room table. Mama gets some paper plates and plastic utensils that she keeps in a cabinet for days like this. We say grace and dig in. Mama sits on the countertop and eats.
This is hitting the spot. "Thank you, Seven Baby. I only had a bag of Cheetos today."
"You didn't have lunch?"
Sakani asks, with a mouth full of fried rice. Mama points her fork at him.
"What did I tell you about talking with your mouth full? And for your information, no, I did not. I had a meeting on my lunch break. Now tell me about y'all. How was school?"
Sakani always talks the longest because he gives every single detail. Seven says his day was fine. I'm as short with my, "It was all right." Mama sips her soda.
"Anything happen?"
"I freaked out when my boyfriend touched me, but..."
"Nope, nothing."
Miss Felicia comes to the door.
"Lisa, sorry to bother you, but we have an issue up front."
"I'm on break, Felicia."
"Don't you think I know that? But she asking for you. It's Brenda."
Khalil's mama. My mom sets her plate down. She looks straight at me when she says, "Stay here." I'm hard-headed, though. I follow her to the waiting room. Miss Brenda sits with her face in her hands. Her hair is uncombed and her white shirt is dingy, almost brown. She has sores and scabs on her arms and legs, and since she's real light-skinned, they show up even more. Mama kneels in front of her.
"Bryn, hey."
Miss Brenda moves her hands. Her red eyes remind me of what Khalil said when we were little, that his mama had turned into a dragon. He claimed that one day he'd become a knight and turn her back. It doesn't make sense that he sold drugs. I would have thought his broken heart wouldn't let him.
"My baby,"
his mama cries.
"Lisa, my baby."
Mama sandwiches Miss Brenda's hands between hers and rubs them, not caring that they're nasty looking.
"I know, Bryn.
They killed my baby."
"I know."
"They killed him."
"I know."
"Lord Jesus," Miss Felicia says from the doorway next to her. Seven puts his arm around Sakani. Some patients in the waiting room shake their heads.
"But Bryn, you gotta get cleaned up," Mama says. "That's what he wanted."
"I can't. My baby ain't here."
"Yes, you can. You have Cameron, and he needs you. Your mama needs you."
"Khalil needed you, I want to say. He waited for you and cried for you. But where were you? You don't get to cry now. Nuh-uh. It's too late." But she keeps crying, rocking and crying. "Tammy and I can get you some help, Bryn," Mama says. "But you gotta really want it this time."
"I don't want to live like this no more."
"I know." Mama waves Miss Felicia over and hands Miss Felicia her phone.
look through my contacts and find Tammy Harris's number. Call and tell her that her sister is here. Bryn, when was the last time you ate?
I don't know. My baby.
Mama straightens up and rubs Miss Brenda's shoulder. I'm going to get you some food. I follow Mama back. She walks kind of fast, but passes the food and goes to the counter. She leans on it with her back to me and bows her head, not saying a word. Everything I wanted to say in the waiting room comes bubbling out. How come she gets to be upset? She wasn't there for Khalil. You know how many times he cried about her? Birthdays, Christmas, all that. Why does she get to cry now? Star, please. She hasn't acted like a mom to him. Now all of a sudden, he's her baby. It's bullshit.
Mama smacks the counter and I jump.
Shut up!
She screams. She turns around, tears streaking her face.
That wasn't some little friend of hers. That was her son. You hear me? Her son.
Her voice cracks.
She carried that boy, birthed that boy, and you have no right to judge her.
I have cotton mouth. Mama closes her eyes. She massages her forehead.
I'm sorry. Fix her a plate, baby, okay? Fix her a plate.
I do, and put a little extra of everything on it. I take it to Miss Brenda. She mumbles what sounds like thank you as she takes it. When she looks at me through the red haze, Khalil's eyes stare back at me, and I realize my mom's right. Miss Brenda is Khalil's mama. Regardless.
6. My mom and I arrive at the police station at 4:30 on the dot. A handful of cops talk on phones, type on computers, or stand around. Normal stuff like on Law and Order, but my breath catches. I count. 1, 2, 3, 4. I lose count around 12. Because the guns in their holsters are all I can see. All of them, two of us. Mama squeezes my hand. Breathe. I didn't realize I had grabbed hers. I take a deep breath and another, and she nods with each one, saying, "That's it. You're okay. We're okay." Uncle Carlos comes over, and he and Mama lead me to his desk where I sit down. I feel eyes on me from all around. The grip tightens around my lungs. Uncle Carlos hands me a sweating bottle of water. Mama puts it up to my lips. I take slow sips and look around Uncle Carlos's desk to avoid the curious eyes of the officers. He has almost as many pictures of me and Sikani on display as he has of his own kids. I'm taking her home. Mama tells him, "I'm not putting her through this today. She's not ready."
"I understand, but she has to talk to them at some point, Lisa. She's a vital part of this investigation."
Mama sighs.
"Carlos, I get it," he says, in a noticeably lower voice. "Believe me, I do. Unfortunately, if we want this investigation done right, she has to talk to them. If not today, then another day."
Another day of waiting and wondering what's going to happen. I can't go through that. "I want to do it today," I mumble. "I want to get it over with." They look at me like they just remembered I'm here. Uncle Carlos kneels in front of me.
"Are you sure, baby girl?"
I nod before I lose my nerve. "All right," Mama says, "but I'm going with her."
"That's totally fine," Uncle Carlos says.
"I don't care if it's not fine," she looks at me. "She's not doing this alone."
Those words feel as good as any hug I've ever gotten. Uncle Carlos keeps an arm around me and leads us to a small room that has nothing in it but a table and some chairs. An unseen air conditioner hums loudly, blasting freezing air into the room.
All right, Uncle Carlos says. I'll be outside, okay?
Okay, I say. He kisses my forehead with his usual two pecks. Mama takes my hand, and her tight squeeze tells me what she doesn't say out loud. I got your back. We sit at the table. She's still holding my hand when the two detectives come in. A young white guy with slick black hair, and a Latina with lines around her mouth and a spiky haircut. Both of them wear guns on their waists. Keep your hands visible. No sudden moves. Only speak when spoken to.
Hi, Star and Mrs. Carter, the woman says, holding out her hand. I'm Detective Gomez, and this is my partner, Detective Wilkes.
I let go of my mom's hand to shake the detective's hands. Hello? My voice is changing already. It always happens around other people, whether I'm at Williamson or not. I don't talk like me or sound like me. I choose every word carefully and make sure I pronounce them well. I can never, ever let anyone think I'm ghetto.
It's so nice to meet you both,
Wilkes says. Considering the circumstances, I wouldn't call it nice, says Mama. Wilkes' face and neck get extremely red.
What he means is we've heard so much about you both, Gomez says. Carlos always gushes about his wonderful family. We feel like we know you already.
She's laying it on extra thick.
Please, have a seat.
Gomez points to a chair, and she and Wilkes sit across from us.
Just so you know, you're being recorded, but it's simply so we can have Star's statement on record.
Okay, I say. There it is again. All perky and shit. I'm never perky. Detective Gomez gives the date and time and the names of the people in the room and reminds us that we're being recorded. Wilkes scribbles in his notebook. Mama rubs my back. For a moment, there's only the sound of pencil on paper.
All right, then. Gomez adjusts herself in her chair and smiles, the lines around her mouth deepening. Don't be nervous, Star. You haven't done anything wrong. We just want to know what happened.
I know I haven't done anything wrong, I think, but it comes out as, yes, ma'am.
You're 16, right?
Yes, ma'am.
How long did you know Khalil?
Since I was 3. His grandmother used to babysit me.
Wow, she says, all teacher-like, stretching out the word, that's a long time. Can you tell us what happened the night of the incident?
You mean the night he was killed?
Shit.
Gomez's smile dims. The lines around her mouth aren't as deep, but she says,
the night of the incident, yes. Start where you feel comfortable.
I look at Mama. She nods. My friend Kenya and I went to a house party hosted by a guy named Darius, I say.
Thump, 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 I drum the table.
Stop. No sudden moves.
I lay my hands flat to keep them visible. He has one every spring break, I say. Khalil saw me, came over, and said hello.
Do you know why he was at the party? Gomez asks.
Why does anybody go to a party? To party? I assume it was for recreational purposes, I say. He and I talked about things going on in our lives.
What kind of things? She questions.
His grandmother has cancer. I didn't know until he told me that evening.
I see, Gomez says. What happened after that?
A fight occurred at the party, so we left together in his car.
Khalil didn't have anything to do with the fight?
I raise an eyebrow.